Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
John!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot Route!
I don't. What is Hot Route?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Down! Ready, down, set, hut, 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 hut!
Hit me! Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch! Nom, 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 nom!
It's time for the Soonerscoop.com postgame show presented by Eskridge Lexus in Oklahoma City. Eskridge Lexus is the official travel partner of Soonerscoop.com podcasts. Now, here's your road crew, Carrie, Eddie, and Bob, wrapping up all the action and reaction from this week's game.
Back it is, another edition of the Eskridge Lexus postgame podcast. Your hosts, Kerry Murdoch and Eddie Radosovic, are here. Josh McQuistion had some family obligations today, as did Bob Prisbillo, whose obligations are apparently IKEA, his day sounds awful.
I mean, I don't know what we're getting ready to have to do and have some of these conversations. I don't know if it, I might rather be at an IKEA.
I know you. You would not. You wouldn't enjoy IKEA.
I don't know. After yesterday, I think that I might rather be at an IKEA, but here we are, and we're going to have to talk this out because this is the worst that the program has been since 1998. I mean, it is what it is.
Well, Eddie and I, at the end of the game yesterday, we just kind of looked at each other and we were like, how do we do this again? Like, what? Like, I think the appropriate, there's not an appropriate adjective, there's tons of them, but beside ourselves, what was the word I kept using with the players on the podium yesterday? They were bewildered. They blindsided. They just looked, everybody seems kind of blindsided by this.
And I think that the most concerning part is the, you know, kind of what I mentioned to you after the postgame press conference. It just seems like there's a lot of people that don't know where to go. And that's including the head coach. That's including the players. That's including, I mean, all the way down to administration and, you know, some other folks that are a part of the program. It just feels like there is nobody that is within the program right now that has gone to the depths of this type of failure. And it is true. Like, there's nobody that knows how to handle the way that they've lost the last 2 weeks. I mean, my God, they've been beat by 30 plus points for the first time in school history in back-to-back weeks.
So we go to the press conference last night after the game. As usual, I wondered how it's going to work out because the losers always go first, which means the winners can celebrate out on the field, get their time, and then they come in after and do all their stuff. And usually the losers want to come in there, take their medicine, get on the road, get home. But Brent Venables takes an incredibly long time to get to postgame press conferences, usually an hour after the game. And so, as I kind of suspected, like, they came in and announced that Texas was going first after we waited and waited and waited. And then OU came out and, you know, the players had already showered. They were in their suits. Like, usually players come in their uniforms and do it. So we watch the press conference, and Joe Castiglione is in there. He's very quiet, doesn't talk to anybody, really. And Brent Venables and his players come in there, and they just all had the same... Like, Braden Willis looked like he had been run over by a train, but he didn't know where it came from.
Well, it sucks. I feel for the guy because he's certainly trying to lead. He's certainly trying to be... the best role model example that you could possibly be, but there's only so much you can do. I mean, the kid, he played his ass off yesterday in the position that he was put in.
He and Eric Gray both did a really good job running that wild.
They did everything that they possibly could.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is what it is. Do you want to get into like big picture shit?
Well, let's set this up first. So we're at the press conference, and it's honestly... You could tell Brent Venables had no answers. He didn't know really. he was befuddled. Like, yeah. He was dazed. And we haven't seen him like that, but it was a man that you could tell did not have the answers to our questions about why it went so wrong.
And nobody wants to hear the shit about these guys are invested, these guys are bought in. Like, at some point, that's going to break. And that it might have been yesterday where it broke for a lot of fans. Like, they don't want to hear that.
I you would hope, like, the reason that Brent seems so just out of it. I mean, you know, just it was like a bomb had dropped on the program. Like, it was almost like him realizing what I'm doing is not working.
Yeah. Well, if I
and,
was
and
like,
I need to feel because well, anyway, so I want to get into some more of what he said and what that means moving forward later. But I'm just trying to set up the stage. So we go to the press conference. It's weird. You know, Kirk Bowles apparently thought that Texas beat the 85 Bears because, I mean, and look, for Texas, it's been 4 years without the Golden Hat. I mean,
well, I mean, you go 7 of 10, 10 of 13, 16 of 22. Like, this is not a game that Texas has had a whole lot of success in, and especially to win that the way that they did yesterday.
And what I'm thinking of this whole time is like, oh, no, oh, you lost the Golden Hat. Like, they won't be able to take any recruiting pictures with that next year.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, that's where my mind is. Like, you guys realize what you did. You lost control of the Golden. Like, there was literally a recruit whose commitment ceremony was selecting a Golden Hat.
Yeah.
Like, that's become synonymous with Oklahoma, and you've now lost that to Texas. Like, that's where my head was at, like, in the post game, and the players were just like, we got our asses kicked. So, anyway, we go through that. It's weird. We'll come back to it. You and I are up in the press box. We're like, what can we say that we didn't say last week at this point? Like, we need to kind of take that drive home, have our thoughts. And the whole time you're getting texts, I'm getting texts, people are telling us what's going, what they're hearing behind the scenes, like what some of that stuff meant in the press conference. So what I found out yesterday is basically everybody that I know got hammered last night because that was the only way they knew how to deal with it. And I'll be honest, I got to Norman at 9 o'clock, drove straight from the Fair Park. My first stop was to the liquor store.
You got there in time.
I got there in time and picked up some whiskey and took it home. And then, strangely enough, I watched football. Like, you cannot, you know, the sad part about this is that OU is no longer a part of the college football big picture. But I'm not giving up on football because it's football. And I'm at home on a Saturday night at a reasonable time, able to watch, you know, some USC and able to watch what was it? Oh, A&M was a great game. And so, you know, I'm like, I'm drowning my sorrows in my whiskey. And I woke up this morning and it's like, I didn't even have the power or the strength to drink. Like, I woke up.
That would have been worrisome if you were drinking on Sunday morning.
I woke up. Yeah. I mean, I went to bed before that Oregon State Pac-12 dark
Stanford game
started. And when I was so tired, I woke up because I'd been to Marietta the day before for the Bevo bash, like woke up at 3, drove down for that, came back to get some stuff at the office and get some things around. Then I went to bed, got up at 6 and drove back to Dallas for the game. So I was pretty tired, but it's not often when Carrie wakes up in the morning and there's a full glass of whiskey just sitting next to his living room chair. Like that's how just distraught I was over this whole deal.
I mean, it just like, and Josh said it last week, the way that they've lost over the last 2 weeks is flat out inexcusable at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. You don't lose like that. And I think that's like the biggest worrisome part about all of this is this thing is going in the wrong direction. Like if we're going to have very honest conversations, this thing is going in the wrong direction to the point of like, I woke up this morning and I'm not saying that they need to fire Brent Venables. Nobody get that out of this, but it's like, can he fix this? And for the first time, and we're sitting here going into week 7, it's like, I don't know if he can. And that's concerning. I think that he can. I believe that he can. I don't know that he can.
I have a similar thought process, but mine is clearly one direction, which is, what are you doing, Brent? Like, you're not preparing your football team. He thinks he is. I mean, he talks about how much the players are invested and what they put into it. There's something he is doing as the head coach of Oklahoma that has these young men unprepared to play well on Saturdays. And, you know, we've been to some practices. We've seen how high intensity it is. Like, do these guys not have anything left by the time Saturday gets here? That's my question.
I just, and I, you know, he mentioned it after the game. It's something that has obviously come up or at least been brought to his attention. Everybody's talking about it. And I just.
What was the exact phrase? Like, my players.
They look tired. And I mean, I almost kind of look at it as an excuse. I know that everybody thinks that it's a soft program or doesn't even think they, I mean, just look at it. It's a soft program.
Historically, now Oklahoma, the national perception is that their defense is soft.
But I'm caught in between of this. Like, I understand trying to lay the foundation, trying to start building what you want a program to be or what you want a culture to be. Right now, the culture for this program is being, I mean,
manhandled
on
Saturdays.
Not competitive on Saturdays. And that's concerning. Like, they could have. I understand the idea of, like, you know, this is a defense that not giving a shit about it for X however many years has caught up with them to a certain extent. Some of the defense that we've seen over the last 2-3 weeks, it was never that bad as it was under Grinch. Like, it looks worse. How do they continue to keep finding ways to just look worse? I don't get it.
You know, I think this is, you know, the biggest challenge for Brent in his professional life right now, which is he's got to be honest with himself. He's got to take some advice. And I don't know, you know, if he wound up at Bob Stoops' house last night. I'm sure Bob was still in Dallas. But, you know, is he there today just trying to get a, you know, like, do you bring Bob out to practice more and say, hey, I need you to weigh in on this? Because
I don't.
When it comes to Saturdays, we're not practicing in a way that gets us ready to play the best possible football we can play on Saturdays. Yeah. So what am I doing wrong? What are we doing wrong as a program? Because you've got to build the purpose of the week is not to practice as hard as you can. The purpose of the week should be to play the best you can on Saturday.
Sure.
So there's something he's doing, something that this program is doing that is not allowing this team to play their best on Saturdays.
And I think that it's probably one of those deals that it's not just one thing. And I think that's what's...
By the way, we haven't gotten to the offense yet.
That's what's so worrisome is, like, I don't think that it is just one thing. It's like, it's part of being tired. It's part of playing guys that probably shouldn't be on the field. It's part of taking an offensive game plan into the Cotton Bowl that you just weren't going to win with. Like, I don't understand how they thought that was what it was going to be. And that leads into the quarterback thing.
I have a hard time questioning the game plan, though, because we kind of told them that that's what they had to do if they were going to win. Come up with an offense that could move the ball with a quarterback that's not any good.
Yeah.
Like, we've been very clear on this. Like, if Dylan Gabriel went down, they have no shot for success.
Sure.
Like, we've said that over and over and over again. And so, I'm doing the Scoop account yesterday, and I think some of it came off wrong, like, in the heat of the moment. Like, I wasn't saying, I want to see another quarterback. I was just saying, no matter who you put in at quarterback, you're not going to win this game.
I completely understand, like, where the fans are coming from, though.
No,
if it's going to look like that,
absolutely,
throw whoever out there.
Right.
Like, at least act like you're trying to go with something else.
And that's the thing that I came to grips with by the end. It was like, okay, I went from trying to tell the fans, like, it's not going to be any good, to, okay, well, I'm with you. Let's just see somebody else because this shit is awful.
I mean,
he threw for 38 yards.
There was a point in, like, the middle of the second quarter where it's already 21-0, and you basically know that this game's over. They're not coming back. They can't move the ball. That you're just basically going out there for 3 or 4 plays before you punt. Like, there was no reason to even run the offense out there at times. And, like, the quarterback thing is just, unless General Booty or Nick Evers just, like, can't catch snaps, I don't care if they only know 3 plays.
Yeah.
Give them run those 3 plays.
Yeah.
Because with Davis Bevel, you're not going to be able to move the football. I don't get it. And, like, I understand.
He's not good.
Well, and there's a lot of things, like, as you said, that, you know, people tweeting into the Scoop account or posting on the message boards or tweeting me or tweeting Josh or whoever. It's like, you know, I don't think I necessarily agree with, like, the manner in which you ask a bunch of these questions. But I do agree with the sentiment that, like, there are some very real, very serious questions that need to be asked of the coaches. Why they don't have a quarterback that can throw the ball like 10 yards down the field. Like, truly.
I think Davis Bevel can throw the ball down the field. He just can't throw it 3 yards.
I mean, I just...
He can throw it 20 with ease. But if you want him to hit you 3 yards on
those should be the easiest throws.
Yeah, on a route, you know, out of the backfield.
And
my God.
Like, I do kind
of... You remember, we were in the press box, and it was a perfect angle, but he had a screen pass he tried to throw to Drake Stoops.
Yeah.
It was one of the worst passes I've ever seen an Oklahoma quarterback throw.
It was awful.
Drake Stoops had no shot. There was not a person, not a defensive guy, no one had a shot to catch that pass.
Every football team in the FBS scored a touchdown yesterday.
Except for one.
I mean, can you... I don't think that I can put it into perspective, like, how far this thing has fallen. I mean, it's obvious. Yeah, you would love to have Caleb Williams on this team, but... For it to fall that far, you start, like, it's only natural, Kerry, to start asking questions like, are guys, have they quit? Like, we're 6 games into this, and have guys quit? Have guys started to tune Brent Venables out with all the rah-rah bullshit that they throw out there?
When they don't play well on Saturday.
It's easy to believe it during the middle of the summer. It's easy to believe it during August. But when you get to nut cutting time, and now you've been flat out embarrassed to a proportion in which Oklahoma fans haven't seen since 1998 for a lot of people on this football team in their entire lifetime. It's like, which way is this thing going? Like, I would have never imagined that we were going to be sitting here going into the week of the Kansas game where Kansas is going to be the only ranked team on the field on Saturday. And it's a must win. Like, it is a must win for the future of the program.
I think, you know, the thing that, like you said, we know every step that's happened along the way that's led Oklahoma here. Like, you were showing me something somebody put on the board about what the percentage of roster from recruiting classes that are still left.
And that's why
abysmal. I mean, it's like this program has literally been raped of its roster.
Yeah, it was a great breakdown from the board. It just said, did some quick research into our bare cupboard. 2018 class, 5 players of the 23 still at OU. Bray Walker is one of the 5. 2019 class should be the senior class. We have 10 guys still at OU out of the 24 signed. Marcus Hicks, Corey Robertson included. 2020 class should be the junior class. We have 14 guys still at OU of the 23 signed. Bryson Washington, Kendall Dennis, Trey West. 2021 class should be sophomore class. We have 10 guys still at OU out of the 16 they signed. And this made me laugh. Who signed 16 effing players in a class, Tebow? And then, so we have a total of 34 scholarship players here from Tebow's last three years, 39 from his total recruiting class, and many of them are not difference makers. And, you know, it's obvious that they have some talent inefficiencies. That is obvious. But
depth inefficiencies.
Or depth inefficiencies. Yeah. It shouldn't be this bad, though. You should, like, again, and I know this is like, people wouldn't be happy at Oklahoma if this was happening, but if they were 3-3 and they're coming off of 35-31 losses or like a 42-27 loss where they were competitive for at least 2 or 3 quarters, I think everybody could live with it. You go, they're trying to instill their, you know, their culture, their foundation into the program, but they're not even competitive. Like, they are being embarrassed to the point of, I think that there are some very like serious conversations amongst donors that it's like, this is not what we're paying for. This is not what we're giving you money to build a new facility for. I don't give a damn what you guys are talking about in the future. Like, we need to see results.
Yeah. This is the worst nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
To go out and play like this.
And it's just,
after you've had all this big talk about how to build championships and he knows the blueprint and all that stuff. I don't want to be snarky about this, but like right now, it doesn't look like Brent Venables knows the blueprint to winning a regular season game.
Yeah,
I mean, that's where the fans are right now.
Every low that they've, you know, put out there here over the last couple of weeks, it goes back to like 1 year, and it's 1998, and everybody knows like what happened to get Bob Stoops here in '99. It was because they were so terrible in 1998.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I don't know, man. It just like yesterday was the first time I've been very like in the corner of Brent Venables as far as, and I still am. It's just like, this is one of those
something's
moments.
Wrong,
like,
but it's like,
you
got
to fix it.
Yeah.
You got to fix it. Like, they're going to give you time. People are going to be patient. The people that are important are going to be patient. But
the thing about it is,
you can't be embarrassed every weekend. This doesn't happen at Oklahoma. And Brent knows that.
Yeah, he knows. And the thing about it is this game was not on the players. I mean, this game is on the coaches, because if the coaching staff did their job, they don't get blown out 49-0. Like you said, they, you know, 49-27. I mean, or at least, you know, hold them in the 30s. I mean, like, that's really what should have happened. Like, I mean, TCU's undefeated. I get it. That game was over at halftime.
It's sad to say it.
Kansas beat them with the backup quarterback, or almost beat them with their backup quarterback yesterday.
Yeah, it's sad to say it. Jason Bean.
Bean almost beat OU.
He almost got me kicked out of the press box last year. Now he's going to just come and completely, like, he might murder me on Saturday. He might actually kill me out on the field. It's one of those things. It's like, I keep waiting for it to bottom out, and I keep waiting for them to, like, start finding a way and build some momentum. And, you know, even early in the game, it was a perfect example. It's like, you use the Wildcat to get down there on the, first and goal. It's 7-0 still. You run a great trick play. Like, you have newfound life. Mm-hmm. And then they can't take momentum. They piss it away every time they get the chance. And that's not going to change a 49-0 game. But they just can't get any type of good momentum right now.
I mean, you know, again, Dylan Gabriel was out. He's coming back. We won't, as long as he's healthy, we don't have to have this quarterback, backup quarterback discussion. But, you know, if Jackson Arnold stays with Oklahoma, like, he's going to be, like, he's not going to have backups either. Like,
no.
If he gets hurt, same,
no.
You're going to be in the same situation. And I keep going back to this, like, Dylan Gabriel's not fixing everything.
No.
I mean, hell, if he's at UCLA, he hasn't even played this year.
No.
Because Dorian Thompson-Robinson is a better quarterback.
And if anything, it's like I told you before we started, like, the whole charade that they threw out there yesterday, it just seemed, it throughout the entire week, really, leading up to the game, it just seemed unneeded.
That's the question. I mean, that was
very unneeded that they would run Gabriel out there for warmups and, like, you know, at practice this week. They knew
the
he
ruse.
Wasn't going to play. Like, I don't think that Texas was looking at Oklahoma's social media and saying, oh, shit, he's practicing. We might have to, like, I don't know.
There's part of me that's like,
for
okay.
a team that's not, for things that are not going well, that seems like just an added almost distraction inside the locker room.
Well, to me, the concern I have about that is, what kind of message were you sending to Davis Bevel all
week? Sure.
You were basically 100%. Telling him, you're not good enough and we need to use trickery and act like Dylan Gabriel is playing and we have to come up with all these wildcat formations and things because you're not good enough to be the quarterback at Oklahoma.
Right.
And General Booty's certainly not good enough. And Nick Evers, you're not good enough either.
And, you know, I
mean, that's a concern to me.
And whose fault is that?
That's Jeff Lebby's fault.
Like, how are they in this spot where you enter a season and you don't have quarterbacks?
There are two things that are high on my list. One is that are problems at Oklahoma. One is the way that you practice and prepare to play for a game on Saturday. The second is the questions about Jeff Lebby and how much he's doing to develop quarterbacks. Because Dylan Gabriel hasn't lit the world on fire. Davis Bevel looks like a guy that shouldn't even have a scholarship.
Gary, I'm at the point, if you have a quarterback back there, if he, yes or no, can he catch a snap? If it's yes, put him out there. I want to see him. Like, put him out there. I don't care if he doesn't know the plays. I could live with General Booty coming in and throwing 5 interceptions on 5 straight series. But at least you're trying.
Yeah. And that's what the fans, like, And it looks bad when you bring Nick Evers in the fourth quarter late, because it looks like, okay, I'm going to put him in there, but I'm going to wait until another quarterback can't come in and play better and make me look dumb for not doing this sooner. I mean, they put him in there and they let him throw the ball once. He bounced it to Gavin Freeman. And it looks bad. Like, I know that you don't want to put somebody else in there who's going to, you know, fumble or throw an interception or do something to give the ball away and make it even worse. But you have to show the fans that you're going to at least try, because they don't understand that.
No, I don't understand it to a certain extent. Like, there's not one person on the offensive side of the football that, if you got the truth and honesty out of them going into the game, that they said that was a game plan that was going to win them the football game.
By the way, I want to thank whoever made the decision to bring Davis Bevel to the podium last night.
I mean, and what
so
an
that
unfair...
I can ask the question in front of him, like, why didn't you change quarterbacks?
Like, what? And you asked Brent Venables, and basically the answer was, we thought that Davis Bevel gave us the best opportunity to win the football game.
We said that they gave reps to all their quarterbacks, and Davis Bevel was clearly their, not clearly, but he was their best option. And again, I go back to but the best option in the Red River rivalry, like, because people can, their sphincters can pucker, and they may not play like they do in practice. And maybe Nick Evers would have, you know, rose to the challenge. I mean, I know that's stupid. The coaches would laugh at me for saying that, but that's how the fans think. And the last thing, you're on the verge of losing your team. Last thing you want to do is lose the fans as well.
I think, and I usually roll my eyes when people talk about, are they losing the locker room? Are they losing things? But I think because everything is so new right now, because of the way that Brent operates, and, you know, he preaches a lot about, you know, the culture and the, you know, the mentality of a program and all that kind of stuff, I am extremely worried that there are going to be guys, and maybe this speaks to just their mental capacity as well, that it's just they're going to tune them out. And then that's when, and have,
and
they,
that's what happened
out
with Mike Stoops.
And have they tuned him out? Because, I mean, the last 2 weeks, they have to be the two most embarrassing losses of my lifetime. Like, at least since what I've been covering it, for sure, no doubt about it. But it just, like, you don't lose like that. You don't. Those are games in which, you know, by the time it got to 21-0 with, what was it, 7:31 left in the second quarter, it was over.
Yeah,
and it might have been over when it was 14-0. Like, they had no opportunity to get back into the game. They had no chance to get back into the game.
Literally, it was over when it was 7-0, because OU was never going to score. They might have kicked a field goal if it had been 7-0, when instead of trying to run Eric Gray up the middle for 1 yard.
I mean, I feel bad to a certain extent for, you know, Davis Bevel, because he's catching all the heat. It's not his fault that he's, you know, I'm sure he's a good kid. It's not his fault that he necessarily just flat out sucks. I mean, it is what it is. Everybody's seen it. He's not a good quarterback. He shouldn't be taking snaps at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be starting in the OU Texas game.
But again, and I'm not trying to defend anybody, who else were they going to get in the situation that they were in?
No,
it was a terrible situation to be in. Well, the fact that they got Dylan Gabriel was a win, and then they just had to get some guys for emergency. He is a break glass in case of emergency quarterback. And so is, you know, General Booty.
Well, and
Nick Evers is the only one that you're like, okay, he's a guy that they should be able to develop and possibly make him a starter someday.
I mean, I think OU was averaging 5.9 at the end of the first quarter on the ground. They were doing things well.
Yeah.
But you had to know, like, I mean, they should fire everybody immediately on the offensive side of the ball. And I don't think this is the case, if they didn't think that Texas was going to adjust and eventually stop the Wildcat. Like, they knew that.
You knew coming after halftime there were going to be some adjustments, and there were.
Second and 12, third and 12, you know that they're not going to be able to just line up and run the football.
And actually, I would say this, when it was 28-0, and you thought maybe they'd get to halftime at 28-0, it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, you thought maybe they could get it to 21-0, and then they score with 18 seconds left.
No, didn't they go up 35 before halftime?
No, it was 28-0 at halftime.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, So you thought like, okay, they get to halftime 21-0. Like, I'd say the defense has made improvement this week.
And Quinn Ewers did miss some stuff early.
Yeah.
But there was a sense of it's like, I mean, it's 28-0 or even 21-0. And I think they played better.
Yeah.
Like, I think they didn't have
I felt the same way.
They didn't have busts.
But in the second half, they just fell apart.
Well, they felt it once it got to 35-0. I mean, listen, you can stand up in the stands and say as much as you want, like, these guys quit. Well, I mean, I would quit too.
It's not so much about like the defense quit. It's just that the offense eventually, they were playing so horribly.
Yeah.
And doing nothing and giving no one any hope. It was just like eventually that thing was just going to fall apart, and it did in the third quarter.
They had an absolute just shit game plan. I mean, I appreciate that they tried some different things. I do like appreciate that in a sense.
There's a part of me that feels like that should be applauded. Like coming up with the Wildcat, doing that stuff when you know that your quarterbacks are as bad as they are.
But you had to know that you weren't going to go into the Cotton Bowl and just run a gimmick Wildcat offense and win a football game.
Like, that's where the expectation was if the defense plays well, we might be able to get away with this.
Yeah.
But all of that was predicated on the defense playing well, which it didn't.
Right. And I
mean, it was an offensive game plan that was made up for Georgia's defense.
Yeah, like an all-time
defense. Like if they lost Stetson Bennett.
Not a defense that was coming off the previous 2 weeks of embarrassing performances in Norman and Fort Worth.
But I'm just saying, there was nothing they were going to do to win that game.
No, and
so coming up with a Wildcat, at least, I mean, it did a hell of a lot more than Davis Bevel did as running the regular offense.
Sure. And
I take issue. I don't think Jeff Lebby's reputation takes a hit because he tried some wild ass stuff. And it's like if you want to say like, oh, it's clear that Lebby's in over. No, he's not. He's not even that type of offensive coordinator. He ran the damn Wildcat for most of the game and they didn't score any points. But they were doing even worse when they just put Davis Bevel behind center. And granted, maybe that goes back to the quarterback development thing. Maybe it goes back to not knowing your quarterbacks and being able to call a game that allows them to, you know, use their strengths and stay away from their weaknesses. You can make that argument. That's fine. But I'm not here to rip on Lebby for trying to come up with something creative.
No, I mean, if there's anything to criticize Levy about, it's just not having another quarterback that's ready, that can be ready to take snaps. And that's somewhat of a serious conversation to be had. You had to know that you were going to go into the season, what if Dylan Gabriel gets hurt?
Well, maybe that's why you don't name your starting quarterback in the spring.
Well, yeah, that was a misstep for sure. Somebody was talking about it on the boards. When did he say that? I want to say it was at the first spring press conference when somebody basically asked, is Dylan going to be your starter? And he said, yes.
Yeah.
So everybody was already on campus, weren't they?
Well, not Davis and not,
were they not
General
yet?
Booty.
Okay.
Because he was the first domino.
Okay.
And they got that's the other thing. They got quarterbacks to commit to him when they knew that there was another quarterback that was going to be starting.
OU is opened as a 9-point favorite against Kansas.
How does that happen? Oklahoma, will you legalize gambling so we can make some money? Because we're losing plenty of it.
Please. Please.
I mean, I feel like this is the first podcast we need to do an ad read for Soonerscoop.com. Like, please keep coming to the website. Our traffic is shit.
I don't know, man. Again, the most worrisome thing for me is it just seems like nobody has the answers right now for anything. Anything.
No. I mean, it's a total... That's
coaches, players, admin, media, fans. Nobody's used to this. This is a level of failure that Oklahoma hasn't seen in, what would that be, 24 years?
Well, you're on to week 7. And like we said, weeks 1, 2, and 3 look like a totally different team, but you go back to the players being tired. Like, have they worn them out in through 6 weeks now?
What do you think has happened in between that Nebraska game and getting back to play Kansas State? Because it's obvious, like the way that they've played, it is only natural to go, there's something going on in the locker room. There is some type of divide.
I don't think it's that at all. I mean, okay. I think it's something's going on in the practice field. They've got to throttle it back. That's my theory. And my theory changes every week. Last week, I was blaming the players.
Yeah.
But based on kind of people that have reached out after the game and stuff that you hear, like, Brent's got to change some things.
Yeah.
And he's got to change the way he prepares his team because it's not working, or at least it's not working anymore this deep into the season.
The most uncomfortable part about that is...
And by the way, I thought they made a great decision by putting Woody Washington at safety.
Yeah.
When I saw him out there starting the game, I was like, wow, that's a really good, you know, that's a really good wrinkle.
Sure.
Because he's played safety before. Yeah,
and you need Billy Bowman back, obviously, but at least they tried something. You know, instead of sticking somebody else back there.
But
the most like shocking,
but back to what they got to do.
No, the most shocking thing for me is, and it's the most uncomfortable thing to talk about, is everything that has led into this demise and failure of what these last 3 weeks have been. I think there was a sense when Brent was hired, it was like, he knows what a winning culture is. He knows what a winning formula is. It's never going to get to that point. Like, he's never going to allow it to get to that point. And it seems like every button that they've pressed is the wrong one. And that's where I go, now, wait a second. Is this too much? Is he going to be able to figure this out? Because, you know, from a discipline standpoint, from a straight execution, a fundamental standpoint, no bust, all that kind of stuff. We've seen all of it. I mean, we've seen the gambit of just overall failure on Saturdays. And I think that that's the one thing that I thought they were going to be able to fix. You can live with not having enough talent. Like, I understand that argument. They need to recruit. They need to continue to do well on the recruiting trail. But there is a sense of, it seems like this is more than just a lack of talent. I mean, there are players that are on the field right now that look like they have literally never played the game, and they, at times, had moments a year ago.
Well, people keep pointing to TCU, and...
Well, and look at Tech.
Yeah, Tech.
Joey McGuire didn't inherit necessarily a great situation, and he has them playing their ass off in Stillwater.
They almost beat OSU with their third-string quarterback.
I just... It doesn't... I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't think Brent knows. I mean, that's the problem.
That's
like
worrisome.
You and I can sit here and try and diagnose it all we want. Brent's got to figure it out. Nobody's calling Kerry and Eddie and saying, "Hey, come and watch practice this week. Tell us what we're doing wrong." This is on Brent. And like I said, him tapping resources that he has, whether it's Bob Stoops, I don't think Bill Snyder's the guy to go to.
See,
right
now. I don't think that. It is interesting, like, what Bob would say. He's going to give you the company line. You know, he goes on with Teddy occasionally, I think once a week. He's going to say that Brent needs time. He's going to tell you that, you know, everything, they're going to figure this thing out. But I think that there is also an element I would love to hear him talk about as far as, you know, his son's on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's just like every other parent. I would love to know, like, how he thinks this thing is being handled. And I can't help but think, I don't think that he will ever interject himself into this thing. But, you know, I'm sure that if Brent asked him, he would tell him what he thinks is going on. Which, by the way, Drake Stoops was having trouble getting back up the tunnel on Saturday. He's like kind of limping.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, maybe that's something that we'll get into this week just as far as his status and availability for Saturday.
That's like a common theme, though. I mean, it's like the fans were going nuts on Twitter, like, these players are faking injuries so they can get out of the game because they quit. Like, no, I just think that Brent beats the shit out of them at practice, and the injuries and the bumps and the bruises are piling up.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we know that it was a very physical preseason, but I just have trouble connecting this team is tired to this team going out and just not even being competitive on Saturdays. Like, I would think that there'd be some sense of...
You only play 12 football games a year. You got to get up for every one of them.
Truly, truly.
That's not a Hick voice, by the way.
Just...
That's high school football guy.
That's the part that is worrisome to me, is that it just doesn't seem like there's any pride. Like, have a little bit of respect for yourself.
You know who has pride?
Who?
Eskridge Lexus.
Yeah, they do have. They have a lot of pride.
Eskridge Lexus, the great sponsor of our post-game podcast, have been for several years. Look, I know the car inventories, they're still pretty limited, but they are, the inventories are improving, and Eskridge Lexus, they've got a lot of new vehicles arriving each and every day. Since their new car inventories have been limited, they've been stocking up on Lexus L certified pre-owned vehicles, those are unbelievable Lexus cars. I mean, the Lexus reliability is legendary. I've been driving one since 2008. I've rarely ever had a problem other than me being too stupid to change the battery in a timely fashion. I think one throttle cable, that's the only thing that's ever happened in, 14 years of ownership of a Lexus. And look, the L certified vehicles come with unlimited mile, full factory warranty with up to 6 years of coverage. They also come with four free services, free car washes, and use of brand new Lexus loaner vehicles while your car's in the service department. So go to EskridgeLexus.com for the most up-to-date inventories or to book your next service appointment, which I just did one of those recently. Very important to do. Keep that thing up to date. So thanks to Ed and everybody over at Eskridge Lexus for always being such great sponsors of the post-game pod. And the official travel partner, Soonerscoop.com.
Love Eskridge Lexus. Do not love the Oklahoma football program right now. This is not fun. Like, this is not fun at all, having to sit here and talk about this.
No, not 3 weeks in a row. I mean, it's unprecedented.
It's not fun. Nobody is having fun. I think that there is a certain element, too, of when you go down and get your ass beat the way that they did in the Cotton Bowl. It's one of those things that you kind of, it gets everybody's attention, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, right? It gets every single person's attention in the realm of the program, whether it be coaches, players, parents, family, everybody. It just shouldn't be this bad. Well, that's what I keep going. I can handle bad. I can handle growing pains. This isn't that.
I think the big thing right now is, you know, as I mentioned, Josie came into the post-game press conferences, sat down in the back, which he's not, you know, not, he's not a stranger in post-game press conferences. He comes to him all the time, good or bad.
Yeah.
But he obviously, I mean, he sat there and you could tell he wanted to hear what Brent Venables said. And I'm sure he's having conversations with him all the time. But, like, is this one of those things where, like, he gets called to meet with Joe C. this week?
They meet once a week.
Okay. Yeah, they do, don't they? This is going to be a little different meeting, I think.
Worry
for his job kind of thing, but...
Right, they're not going to
fire him. Everybody's got to be concerned about what's going on right now.
You have to be. They're not going to fire him. I mean, he's not in jeopardy of losing. Like, they're not, and they're, you know, I saw somebody ask about play calling duties. They're not taking the play calling duties away from Jeff Lebby. They're not going to make drastic, like, nobody's going to resign. Nobody's quitting. But there are some very serious conversations that you have to sit down, and you don't have to tell Brent that this is unacceptable. He knows that it is.
Yeah.
I go, now that they're 3-3, now that they're in the spot that they are, like, you legitimately have to start worrying about the future. I don't care if a kid has given you 4 years out on the field. If he's not getting it done, and I know that we talk about this after every loss, it's like, get somebody else out there. Get somebody that wants to be out there and wants to learn and wants to develop to a certain extent.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. Brent always has, like, names for people that you don't want to be, like Johnny Gigolo. Mm-hmm. Johnny Jack Around.
He's Failure Fred right now.
Johnny Five. No, I got a name for him.
What?
Johnny Junction Boy.
Johnny Junction Boy? Oh, yeah.
You don't want to be Johnny Junction Boy.
And especially now with the way that this thing, like, it's not a good look to be the dictator. I'm not saying that he's been a dictator, but running the program where people are almost fearful.
I think he's always been really good about, you know, coaching tough and loving hard and all that.
You can coach tough when they know that they, like, care about you. He's talked about this.
Right.
But I think that there is a sense
And that's what's surprising about, like, you know, just not... Like, That's why you have to question, like, is it not about that? Is it about these guys truly, you know, 7 weeks now into the season, like, they have nothing left because they've been asked to give so much to reshape the culture?
But then again, like, was that all worth it knowing what the culture is right now? The culture certainly isn't winning.
Well, like the old saying says, winning cures all ills.
Sure. Sure. And I completely get the conversation that we had last week, Kerry, about, you know, the defense specifically is a product of not giving a shit on that side of the football for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's caught up with them, obviously.
And not one person on this team knows how to really play defense.
No.
To the level that it wins you games.
Yeah.
They know how to play defense not to lose.
But
no one
like,
has ever been asked to play defense that is winning defense. Like, you can have a shitty offense and still win games.
Yeah.
Because your defense is that good.
But they have guys out there that have just, like, that played football, that have played football at Oklahoma. It just looks like they have no idea what they're doing. Like, absolutely no idea. Like, angles and fundamentals and fits.
The one thing I would say is just it wasn't as bad as TCU, but it still wasn't good. Like,
no, that's the state of the program right now. They've lost 49
to nothing. I think Texas had a 12-play drive at one point. Like, that's like you see that. And that was why, like, at 21 nothing, you're like, okay, well, at least they're not giving up all these explosive plays.
No, yeah.
Like, but then late you saw, like, Bijan Robinson had that little outlet pass that he took, like, 11 yards untouched.
And that then was that stuff the point. Started happening. I mean, that was the point where it's just like, they're going through the motions.
Right. Exactly.
And I, you know, it's not the best look in the world, but I almost halfway don't even.
At that point, when your offense has done absolutely nothing.
It's like, I don't care.
How does
point.
It, how, yeah, how are you supposed to care? What human on this earth would care in that situation?
And I think that is the point of, there is like this point of no return where people are just going to become apathetic to it. And they're going to be like, well, hey, let us know when you want to be competitive again. We'll come back and watch. And that's the worst spot for a college football program to be in.
Well, and the big question is nobody wants to see Kansas come in here and beat Oklahoma.
No, it's not
one OU fan is willing to stomach that. So, like, is the sellout streak intact? Like, that's my concern next.
It's the worst kind of like must win that you've ever been in. It's not a must win for all the good reasons. It's a must win because you fall to 3-4. That would be the latest that this program has been under 500 in a season since 98. You're coming off of, you know, every historical checkbox marker that you can think of over the last 2 or 3 weeks, as far as their inability to just be competitive out on the field. And I think that there will be a lot of people that, if they haven't already, they will turn. And It's just not a great spot to be in. I mean,
let me ask you this. I mean, we keep talking about this in terms of, you know, this is not Oklahoma. This is not who they are. Why can't Brent fix this? What if it's just simply like all the stuff we talked about with the roster? Like, what if we're just not willing to admit that this program has fallen into disrepair almost overnight? The coaching changes, the transition, like the roster turnover.
I mean, if that's the case, it's Brent's fault.
How is it?
They won 11 games last year.
But I'm saying they don't have the roster. They don't have Caleb Williams.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this is stupid because this is kind of what we've preached for the last couple of years. Can one player be that impactful to a program?
But it's not just one player. I mean, it's the guys they lost in the draft that they didn't replace. You talked about Lincoln's recruiting and how many guys are left. Like,
sure.
From the guys that left, whether it's the draft or transfer, like everybody, it's like every kid that's worth a crap, except for Theo Weiss, who went in the portal, came back, Marvin Mims, who stayed.
Might be going back in the portal.
To me, you've got to find ways to get Jahlil Farouk more involved because he's becoming a star.
Yeah. I mean,
have the running backs, but
has it fallen that far, though?
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah,
that's what I'm asking. Like, are we just not admitting that it's fallen as far as it has?
Sure. I mean, they're the worst team in the Big 12 right now. They're the worst team in the Big 12.
But all the guys that are left have stars next to their name, so you just think they must be good.
Yeah.
Yet, how many of those guys that aren't playing do you look at and say, well, he's just got to be better than that? Like, he's, you know.
Yeah.
Like, who at safety are you looking like? We noticed, like, Bryson Washington was back, like, this weekend. Like, he's another guy, highly recruited. You know, you would think that he could start for anybody in the Big 12. Maybe he's just not any good.
When they've hit the bottom that they have, I think just like everybody else, you just want to see somebody else out there.
I mean, like, the problem
how
is
much
had,
worse can it get?
You've had all these defensive coordinators. They've all evaluated these players that are on the roster for the most part. I mean, you bring in like a Trey Morrison, Lualu, you know, a handful of guys. Jeffrey Johnson actually made a really good play early in the game. But you're trying to piece it together. How many guys that Alex Grinch or Mike Stoops recruited are out there making a difference? Woody Washington?
I mean, making a true difference?
Yeah, a difference.
I can't name one guy. That's how down I am on this thing. Like, is there one guy on
then
the defensive
side of the football?
Then
this roster is terrible.
Is there one guy? Like, am I just not thinking of somebody?
We want Danny Stutzman to be one of those guys, but I mean, I think like Stutzman fits in as yes, that was a big time player.
Yeah.
Like David Agwebu was always kind of like a potential guy, an athletic freak. Woody Washington, very highly recruited.
Jaden Davis, no. Keith Lawrence, no. Justin Royals, no. CJ Colden, obviously not part of that class. Trey
yesterday.
Morrison, not part of that class. Deshaun White, no. Jalen Redmond, no. Reggie Grimes, no. R. Mason Thomas, not part of that. Ethan Downs, not really. Jordan Kelly, not really. I mean, I'm at the point where
That's not a group of playmakers right there.
No. I'm at the point right now where I want to see somebody else. Like, I could handle losing. I could handle losing by 30 again next week to Kansas if they just tried other people. At least say that you're going to go down fighting.
Yeah.
But running the same stuff out there, it's obviously not getting better. It's getting worse. That's kind of where I am. And, like, that's where you go. And it's going to be a question that's going to be asked, I'm sure of, on at least Tuesday to Brent. And, you know, it's going to be one of those questions that I think everybody's going to know the answer to. He's not going to throw guys under the bus. He's not going to say that they're quitting on the starters. But at some point, you got to start thinking, like, you got to get freshmen in there. You got to get somebody else in there because those guys are going to end the portal, or those guys, that's the worry, or you're just going to lose. Like, I don't know.
If it doesn't happen with Kanick, I don't think it's happening with, like, Kobe McKenzie.
And yeah. Kip Lewis got in.
Kip Lewis.
I guess it all doesn't matter, though. I mean, they were still awful on the defensive line yesterday. I don't know
going
how
with the
anybody
three-man
thinks.
Front most of the game.
Like, that is.
They did start switching it up in the second half when it was all but lost.
Well, at least it was only 35-0 then. Like, that's. It just seems asinine that they keep trying to run this three-man front that. And obviously, like, Teddy and those guys would know a ton about more about football than I would, but it just seems like you need an extra body up there because you're not getting three guys back there.
Well, and then when they're sending guys, I mean, they got some pressure on Ewers early. I
Did
mean,
they?
The pick that that Washington dropped, there was pressure on Ewers when he threw it.
Maybe one play, though. I mean,
there was pressure on him when CJ Colden intercepted his.
Yeah, that was in the second half, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the game was, well, you know, it was 28-0 at the time. I don't know. In some ways, offensively, it's just like, they got to get Dylan Gabriel back. But even with Gabriel yesterday, it doesn't matter.
No.
Like, he's not going to make up the difference in that.
I just,
he might
it's
be able
kinda
to move
like,
the ball a little bit more consistently.
Yeah, but it's kind of like judging Jeff Lebby on, you know, what he did yesterday without Dylan Gabriel. I don't think that's fair.
It's like, maybe not fair, but it's also his fault that they're like in that spot without a quarterback. I mean, it just is. He's the one that recruited those guys.
I'd also put it on Lincoln Riley. It's his fault too. You gave a guy, you let a guy come in December? I mean, it's Josie's fault for taking so long to hire. I mean, there's a lot of people. It was a shitty situation.
Yeah. No, it was.
And we've said all along, if someone besides Dylan Gabriel has to play, it's not going to go well. And it didn't go well. So why the fuck are we sitting here talking about what Jeff Lebby is or isn't as an offensive coordinator? It wasn't going to go well. We knew it wasn't going to go well.
Yeah.
I think we're wasting our breath just talking about this and judging him based on what we saw yesterday.
No, I don't think that like they need to like relieve him of his duties by any means because, I mean, and I thought he called a pretty good game. Like up until yesterday when he had his hands tied behind his back, it's like they had open guys. Dylan Gabriel just wasn't hitting him. But then that goes into the idea of like Gabriel's Lebby's guy. He's the one that brought him in. He's not performing the way that he should.
Yeah. Now, if you get goose egged with Dylan Gabriel as your starter, that's a discussion we should have.
Sure. Sure.
But I mean, Dylan Gabriel didn't play yesterday.
They just sold out almost. They kind of sold themselves out and said, we're going to do this.
The interesting thing is, do they go back to the Wildcat when Dylan Gabriel comes back?
I mean, they probably won't, right?
They shouldn't. I mean, if his offense is everything it's supposed to be, we should never see the Wildcat again.
I mean, there's
unless it's like goal line or something.
Yeah, there's certain areas like a 4th-and-1 or something. I thought they ran the ball pretty well out of the Wildcat.
They did.
Like Eric Gray had a couple. I'm down there on the field. They were opening some huge holes. Looked great. Looked really good at times.
Yeah.
But they had to know that that was not going to be a thing that they were going to be able to do for 4 quarters. And maybe they did know, and they're like, well, this is all we can do.
I just don't care anymore about the offensive discussion. I don't give a shit.
No, I'm
they came up with some wild ass game plan because they did have a quarterback.
Fact and fact. I'm more worried about like the overall aspect of this entire operation than I am like legitimately being.
Well, guess what? When Dylan Gabriel can play, we don't have to worry about all this shit that we're sitting here wasting time talking about.
Yeah.
We don't. It's either sink or swim with Dylan Gabriel running Jeff Lebby's offense.
I still don't have any confidence that they can beat Kansas.
Do you think I do? I'd love to bet on Kansas right now.
I mean,
FOU's a favorite?
There's just no...
Nine? That's
points.
Insanity.
There's just no level of me that thinks that, like, I ultimately, I guess at the end of the day, it's worrisome that they haven't been able to find answers. They can't stop bleeding.
By the way, I don't care if people take issue with this or not. Stop comparing this to John Blake. John Blake became a head coach, and he never was a coordinator before that. People forget that. He was a defensive line coach for the Dallas Cowboys. He never had to have a duty as a coordinator, and he became a head coach. Like, Brent Venables was the top defensive coordinator in the country for years. Like, he's not as inept as John Blake was. And the people that are saying it are probably people that didn't pay attention to OU football back then. So, look, it's hard to defend Brent. I'm not trying to defend him. He's got to fix some stuff, or he's going to be in a lot of trouble soon.
Yeah.
But come on, stop it with the John Blake comparisons.
But there are elements of like how poorly they've played. There hasn't been an OU football team that has played this bad since those
Blake
years.
They're setting all the records that haven't happened since 1998.
Yeah.
Pre-Stoops.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the fact of the matter. I think that's what's the toughest thing to swallow is that, I mean, we can talk about like has this thing fallen as far as we think it has? The facts of the matter is yes. On the scoreboard, it says that it has.
No, it's not as far as we have. It's just my point was, is the reason not because the staff is inept, is it because the roster just sucks and we're not willing to admit it?
I think it's both.
It's a little bit of both.
And that's not the answer that anybody wants to hear. You can't, and I think that's like one of the biggest beefs out there is the fact that you can't point to one thing and say, they got to fix that or they got to fix this. It's they got to fix it all.
It's a puzzle that they've got
to
figure out.
They have
out.
To fix everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. And guess what? I won't talk about it anymore. I'm done. Like for this week, at least. I'm saving the rest for next week.
It's very concerning.
I'm concerned. Trust me, I'm concerned. and it comes from the I don't want the fan base to just check out.
Yeah. But I think that there
As a business person, that's not good for my business.
No, but I think that there are a lot of people that there's other things that you can do than watch this bullshit. Like, they're not even being competitive for more than a quarter.
No.
And that's where you go. And nobody has to tell Joe C this. He knows. When you're trying to make this move into the SEC, when you're trying to make this grand, like, revival, I guess, of a program and that they're in now, and you're trying to build facilities, you're trying to do all this kind of stuff, you cannot do that if you're putting out those types of performances.
Well, and I think that's the most surprising thing is, like, everybody thought Brent was the guy to get OU ready for the SEC because he'd been at Clemson, he'd beaten Alabama, he won national championships, yeah. He's been in that arena. And he's not even in the Big 12. He's not even in the top half of the Big 12.
Let's get a Big 12 conference win for the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, truly. It's to the point now, and they always talked about, like, we're going to take this thing from good to great. It's taking steps back. Like, why are they regressing? And, you know, I think we talked about the Andy Staples article with Thad talking about people around here haven't experienced what bad is. Well, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
This better be it, because if it gets any worse, which, again, I find myself saying this for the last month, I don't know how it could get worse, and then they find a way to do. But if it gets worse, they're never going to have the opportunity. They're never going to have the opportunity to pull this thing out because they will be run out of town. I don't want that to happen. I think that they still will be able to get this thing fixed. I do. But
I mean, pulling the plug halfway through, no, I don't ever see that happening.
No, and they're not going to.
I think Brent's going to get a full season to make this look better. That's his goal right now. It's just to look better.
Yeah.
Especially on the defensive side of the ball. And they haven't been great on the offense. Dylan Gabriel's going to have to play better. Offense is going to have to play better. But I think they're running the ball better. Dylan Gabriel has to live up to his end of the bargain of passing the ball better, being more accurate. But now it's not about, it's barely about getting to a bowl game at this point.
If they go 3-9 and just for fun, we'll say start like 1-2 next year, they have to fire him. This thing will not be, you will not be able to live to get to conference play.
Yeah.
And that pains me to say it. I think Brent can still get this thing fixed. And now the next, the next mountain here is
well, there's keeping a step this recruiting in, class. Yeah, there's together. A step in between this year and next year, which is the recruiting class.
Have to keep it together.
Yeah.
And it's only human to think that they're going to lose a couple guys. And you just hope that they're the guys that, you know, you don't want them to be.
Yeah.
It can't be Jackson Arnold. It can't be, Vasek. It can't be whoever on the defensive line. They need difference makers. Hopefully that, you got to recruit your balls off now to keep this thing together. It might be more tough to keep the recruiting class together than it is to get this football team back.
Yeah, I'm.
I mean, is this what Nebraska and Texas were like?
I think it's probably what Texas was like. I mean, they lost six games in a row last year?
Yeah, but they were at least, weren't they competitive in games? I just can't get over the fact that Oklahoma is getting embarrassed on Saturdays. The players, the coaches, the fans. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, it's not fun. I'm not having
fun. It's insane. It's insane. It's insane.
All right. I'm ready to end this.
Win a big 12 conference game, and then we'll start working our way back to at least being positive about life.
I felt better before we started doing a podcast, and now I just feel worse.
I'm going to run my car off the side of the road. No, it sucks. It is what it is. They can't change anything that has happened, though. You just hope that there's just a little bit of pride within the program that they can figure this out.
Like, we don't know how to fix it. You don't know how to fix it either out there listening. I think I'm done, just getting everyone's two cents on how to fix it or what to do.
I know that everybody was thinking it yesterday, but it is very uncomfortable. People chanting for "We want booty" coming into the game in the second quarter. Like, that, it's just not the best look in the entire world. But then again, I get it. You want to see somebody else. I do too. You know, it just like, it's very uncomfortable to hear. I don't know. You know, Jackson Arnold sitting there in the crowd. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that you want to be able to get the offense to move the football, but I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's like, ooh, that's just such a bad look right now.
Yeah, it's not good.
But it's only going to get worse if they don't improve.
Dylan Gabriel didn't play, so I'm not going to be that concerned about it.
Yeah, that's fine. It just wouldn't have changed the outcome, though.
I know. I've said that all along.
Yeah.
Until the defense plays better. But we won't have to stop. We won't have to talk about the stupid backups that aren't any good if Dylan Gabriel just stays healthy. And we'll just be able to bitch about how Dylan Gabriel isn't Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray. Or
far from
Hurts or Caleb Williams. All right. I'm a little testy. I want this to end. I want to stop talking about what I saw yesterday because it's just, I got the alcohol when I got home so I could forget about it. But then I was too tired to drink it. So I'm having to confront this head on. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all. So we're going to keep going to games. We're contractually obligated and subscriptionally obligated. Regardless, I'll just say this. Stay with us. We're doing our best to cover this and cover it for you guys. Do the pods. Still work. We still have an office. There's still lots of crap sitting around getting put together. So it's not like we're going anywhere. So yeah, just stick with us. Don't let the team drive you away from Sooner Scoop. We're here. We're here to commiserate, to be therapist if we have to. So
would Kale being around change anything?
It would be one less hostile situation for Brent to deal with.
That's a big talking point today.
I mean, it's pretty obvious, the Kale army is out there, and yeah, they're not happy. I mean, I know you've dealt with some of that. I've dealt with some of that. His supporters.
Yeah. It's obvious.
That are still upset about the way everything went down.
I just don't know if that would change everything right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think Lebby's still running the show. He's still in charge of everything. Sure. So.
All right.
I don't really see it being. I know that's a pretty obvious thing. Like, maybe he could add some wisdom to it. Fact of the matter is, Dylan Gabriel did not play. So let's just, like they sometimes say, burn the tape, move on.
This is a month of burning the tape.
Well, on defense so far. Anyway, all right. We are done. I think I'm done. I don't know how my day is going to play out. I might go find the whiskey again and watch the Cowboys game. So thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week from Norman, from the offices, as Kansas is coming to town. Thanks to Eskridge Lexus. Go check them out, eskridgelexus.com. See, this was more of an angrier post-game reaction podcast than last week. That was a little bit more, we had more people involved. So this was just Eddie and I just getting pissed.
I mean, it's just like, at the end of the day, it's just almost kind of like one of those things. It's like, it kind of is what it is. They are what they are. Like, if they're not embarrassed by this bullshit, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
If you can't, if you come back to Norman and you aren't, like, truly devastated to the core and embarrassed, then go. Leave. Get out.
Transfer
leave.
Portal.
Transfer. F*** you. Get out. It is what it is.
All right.
I think I'm done.
Last
now.
Words from Eddie.
I'm done now.
We'll see you guys back here next week for another edition of the Eskridge Lexus Postgame Podcast from Soonerscoop.com.